This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/recommend today.
Stephen Moore joins us now. Always great to have the senior economic contributor at FreedomWorks on with us. Stephen, every week we talk about this spending bill. We get a little closer to something, but I'm not 100% sure what the Democrats are going to be able to achieve here.
Well, it's a big mess right now. I mean, this is, in my opinion, the worst bill in the history of the United States, or at least in the last 50 years of my lifetime.
Wow.
This bill is atrocious. It massively increases tax rates, and our tax rates would be higher than those of China, for goodness sakes. They're a communist country, and we're going to have higher tax rates than China. It is the Green New Deal. It destroys the American energy revolution that we've seen in coal and natural gas and oil in this country. It would take a big step towards nationalizing our healthcare system. It would require people to join unions. It has an assault on small businesses with the big 40% tax at death on family-owned businesses. I mean, I could go on and on. But what's really interesting, the latest development on this, is the Democrats can't pass any of this until they pass a debt ceiling increase. Now, this is something that, you know, for 100 years, whenever the Congress has to raise the debt, they have to raise a debt ceiling. It's like the credit card limit, right, on your credit card. And the big play right now in Washington is the Democrats and the media are trying to shame the Republicans into voting for this debt ceiling increase when, you know, all they've done for the last 6 months is act like one party rule. Now they're coming hand in glove to the Republicans, say, oh, please join us in voting for a debt ceiling increase. Any Republican who votes for that is crazy. They would be aiding and abetting this gigantic, debt bill that could bankrupt our country. If you add all the spending together, the normal budget of $6 trillion they want, plus the $5 trillion bill that they're now debating, plus the $1 trillion infrastructure, plus the $1.9 trillion. I know your head is spinning right now, right?
Lots.
Add all that up, it's $11 to $12 trillion.
Oh, man. Man, Stephen Moore joining us right now with FreedomWorks. I am repeating in my head over and over and over again Joe Biden's commitment to the American people, should he get elected, and since he's been elected, that he would not increase taxes on people earning less than $400,000 a year. Is he committed? Is he keeping with that promise today?
Well, here's the other. We could talk for 2 hours about this bill, but one of the interesting developments is the Democrats don't want to tell us what's in the bill. You know, it's going to be five to six to seven thousand pages long, and they're trying to hide it from the American people because they're stuffing it right now. What's going on right now is a feeding frenzy of lobbyists to put everything they possibly can stash in this bill. You know, there's special interest provisions for the unions. There's special interest provisions for, you know, the green energy sector, for journalists, for any group that gave money to the Democrats, they're rewarded in this bill. It's a classic pay to play. So when you ask me, like, what's going to be in the bill, I can't tell you because they won't tell us. And by the way, if they're so proud of it, why are they keeping it secret?
No kidding. And making it so massive that nobody will ever completely read this bill. You talk about special interest groups. What about the voters who elected Joe Biden with promises of what he wouldn't do to middle income earners?
If those
special interests get their way, there's no way that middle income is going to stay safe.
Oh, okay. So I'm sorry. I never actually answered your question. You're right. So what about this pledge of not taxing people that make less than $400,000? What we know so far about the Ways and Means Committee, which is the tax writing committee in Congress. And as you know from your Constitution, where do all tax bills have to start? In the House, right? So the House is writing this bill, and they're trying to keep it secret, but there have been some leaks. they want a carbon tax, which is basically just a tax on using energy. So anytime you turn the ignition on your car or turn on a light bulb, you know, you're going to pay that tax. And by the way, I think it's people who make less than $400,000 who do that.
Mm-hmm.
So and then they want a tobacco tax. They want a vaping tax. They want a tax. One of my favorite ones, they want to put a device on your car to track how many miles you drive and then tax you on the basis of that. Again, you know, middle class people own cars in the United States. I guess Joe Biden and the Democrats don't understand that. But you know, they think, by the way, one of my favorite special interest provisions, they want to give people a $7,500 payment if they buy an electric vehicle like a Tesla. And by the way, if you resell it, you get another $2,500. You can't make this stuff up.
Yeah. Yeah. You know, to me, it's similar to the senseless act of overcompensating people to stay at home from work and take their money as opposed to going to work and make their money.
Well, that's the other big, you know, part of this bill that thank you for bringing that up. So, you know, back in 1996, Bill Clinton signed a welfare reform bill, which was really historic. It was bipartisan. It was something that Newt Gingrich and the Republicans had pushed, but many Democrats were on board that. We passed welfare reform, which basically said, we're going to give you a safety net. We're going to take the safety net away, but you're going to have to either be working or you have to be looking for a job or an education or being trained for a job. You can't just sit home and watch Netflix. And that was a great success, by the way, one of the most important social policy achievements of your and my lifetime. We got half of the people off of welfare into a job, and they actually climbed the economic ladder of success. Guess what? They want to get rid of all that. So you don't have to – there's no more time limits. There's no more work requirements. It's just basically sign up for all the benefits. You can get $67,000 to $80,000 of all these benefits. It's just craziness.
Yeah, it is. Absolutely. Stephen Moore, senior economic contributor at FreedomWorks, talking to us right now. I'm sure you managed to see the Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez Met Gala dress, tax the rich. And we hear this phrase all the time, fair share. How balanced or unbalanced is it right now? Should we be taxing the rich more? Isn't it time that they pay their fair share of taxes in this country?
Well, look, I mean, I'm still waiting for that moment that you show up in the Met with a I love capitalism dress. Okay.
If they want to invite me and someone wants to spot me tens of thousands of dollars,
I'll get you invited. Okay.
Amen.
Do you have $35,000 to pay for the ticket?
I have $35 if they'll let me in for that.
Well, we're not the glitterati like AOC. You know, she really loves the. You know, the poor, what's the old saying? She loves the poor so much she'd have us all be poor.
Yeah. She likes the photo op. That's
ridiculous.
What she likes. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I mean, look, tax the rich, tax the rich. This was the speech that Biden gave last Wednesday or Thursday. It was one of the worst speeches. It wasn't a speech, it was a press conference, but he went on and on about soak it to the rich, sock it to the rich, eat the rich. It reminded me of that scene from the last Batman movie with Bane, where Bane said, you know, Manhattan is in complete chaos. Gotham City is being ransacked by looters and stuff. And he's giving the speech, kill the rich, kill the rich. You know, that's what our country is turning into. Look, I think everybody should pay their fair share, of course. I've always been a flat tax guy. I love the idea. Get rid of all the loopholes. I mean, if there's somebody who's not paying their taxes, yeah, they should pay their taxes. How they do it? By the way, who do you think wrote the tax code over the last 40 years?
The lobbyists and the rich people? I don't know.
And Joe Biden. I mean, he was there. The tax code is so bad. Why didn't he do anything about it, right?
He needed 50 years so that he could actually get in there and get something done. It blows my mind. Either way, right now with this, what the Democrats are trying to do in Washington, D.C., one of two things has to be true. Either they feel they have a mandate from the American people to get something done like this, or they feel like if they don't get it done now before 2022 hits, they're never going to get it done. Do you feel one way or the other about how these Democrats are making their decisions?
I'm heading up a coalition. We announced it on Friday called Save the Country, Kill the Bill. And it's basically on, you know, all the horrible features of this bill. And one of the things we have to do to kill this bill is to delay, 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 delay. That Democrats are in a huge hurry to pass this because, look, they see the meltdown in Biden. Biden, you know, is at, what, 42% approval rating right now. He's, you know, the Democrats, they've got a crisis at the border. They've got a crisis with inflation. They've got a crisis with COVID. They've got a crisis in Afghanistan. I mean, everything they've touched, they've ruined. Gee, what a shock that Democrats are not very good at running things. And so they realize this window is slamming shut on them. So they want, they literally want to get this thing passed. Do you remember what Nancy Pelosi said about Obamacare?
Yeah, I got to pass the bill so they can see what's in it. It's terrifying.
Well, they want to try that ruse again. Oh, we'll find out what's in that bill after we pass it. You know, so how about this for a theme to kill the bill? How about read the bill? How about read it? Is that asking so much? By the way, when is the last time you read a 5,000-page book?
Yeah, that's not happened. That's not happened.
I mean, so how? No, seriously, how many of these members of Congress do you think are going to read a 5,000-page bill?
None of them. None
Zero.
Of them.
Zero. This is how we make laws in this country. It is absurd. So, you know, I think Joe Manchin, the Democrat, has it right. He said, what's the hurry here? Let's have a strategic pause. Let's figure out what's in the bill, what's what we need, what's not, get rid of all the special. And let's not raise taxes on American businesses. Let's not do that. Why are we doing that? Why are we punishing our successful businesses?
Especially right now, coming out of a pandemic where everybody is trying to get their footing and, you know, maybe they had a little government help along the way in a crisis. But it seems like right now punishing people who need to be employing individuals is not the way to go.
Yeah. All right. I got to jump on Fox News now. So
right.
Turn on your TV and you'll see my beautiful face.
Of course. You can't see that on the radio. Oh. We appreciate it, Stephen. We'll let you go.
Always a pleasure.
We'll talk
Take
to you
care.
Soon. Bye-bye.
Bye.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/recommend today.
The Annie Fry Show is streaming online. Watch us live on YouTube and subscribe.
Baby, let's cruise. Don't be confused.
The way is clear.
And if you want it, you got it forever.
This Welcome back to the Annie Fry Show. I'm just playing a lot of music today that apparently I want to listen to. It's more than me.
What is this?
This is a song called Cruise, and it is by Gwyneth Paltrow. And
it's from that movie.
It is from a movie. Is it Brian? It's not Brian Adams, is it?
No, it's Huey Lewis.
Huey Lewis, that's what it is.
Yeah.
Huey Lewis. Yes.
This song sounds really good in my headphones. I bet it doesn't sound nearly as good on the radio, though.
No, it sounds good on the radio.
Well, we'll see.
It's a good vibe. And I like that it's Gwyneth Paltrow. Like, I like her voice in that. It's perfectly suited for it. It's not anything, you know, she's no Celine Dion, but she didn't need to be.
No, I love her moisturizers.
I actually hate Gwyneth Paltrow, but
that
song was very pleasant.
It's my favorite thing about her.
It's the bass line.
That one song is your favorite thing about her.
It's the bass line. The bass line, the groove is so good.
Yeah, it sounds way older than 10 years ago.
I love
it. Because it's who you live with.
Yeah, well, though, the bass line, it sounds like it's like a late 60s sort of like mild funk
Motown.
Era. So I feel like it's 2021 and we're really missing an opportunity to be in the 20s again. Do you know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Fashion, music, fun.
Yeah, I love that idea.
Let's
do it.
Do that again.
We were actually, my friends and I are talking about having a murder mystery party. Have you ever heard of this? Where like a crew will come to your home
and murder somebody.
And then blame it on one of you.
Can you imagine a murder mystery organized by Ryan Wiggins?
The only ones I've ever been to.
Your house.
That's the scariest kind.
The only ones I've ever been to were in college, and they were like themed, where you had to dress up as some sort of character, but they gave you the character ahead of time. They would always give me.
So this is what we're talking about doing. We're talking about doing a 20s themed, like the flapper girl and the like walking around with like the cigarette holders, even if you're not smoking, and the like the headbands. And
the fake cigarettes where you blow like little powder out of them.
Mm-hmm. It's like little puffs of air. But in the 20s. Mm-hmm. So if we just want to bring back the 20s, I think that'd be great too.
Have you guys ever done that? Been to one?
No.
Because my wife and I and some of our friends went to one at the Spaghetti Factory.
Mm. Oh, that'd be
cool.
And it was like, it wasn't themed, but all of the characters were spoofs on famous characters. So like my friend was Doobie Doo. So he had to do a Scooby-Doo voice, and it was amazing. He won at the end, and they gave him canned ham.
Oh, nice.
Congrats, Dubes.
I think that sounds like my worst nightmare, going to one of those. Don't spit your coffee out, Trisha.
It would be.
You're not
wrong about that.
How much any of you know about me? Let's get dressed up and go to a murder mystery at the Spaghetti Factory. I'm like, I will be at the corner table at the Spaghetti Factory eating some butter noodles with Mazithra cheese and enjoying myself. And you guys do you. But no. I don't
That's
know.
So fun to me.
As you know, whenever I would get a line in those things, when my wife and I were first married, we went to a couple of those.
How many times have you been married?
I don't know.
The first time.
Over the last how many years?
Times.
When we were first married, we were going to a couple of these things and having fun because she's a drama teacher and she's really into that world. And she's like, oh, if they give you any lines.
She's just super dramatic.
Yeah. My daughter is. they would give us lines. They'd give me, you know, maybe one line.
Mm-hmm.
I was like, Katie, I'm going to make the most out of this one line, which is the exact opposite of what you would do. I know. You'd be like, I don't even want it. This one line.
No. I know. I do have a 3-hour talk show, but I do not want to talk in that capacity.
But we went to one on vacation. It was like, oh, man, we're on vacation. Let's go to one while we're in. I think we were in Virginia doing Williamsburg. We went to one that was supposed to be like, oh, it's amazing. And you show up, and it is like community theater, and nobody in the audience participated. You just watched a murder mystery play like on a high school stage. It was the worst thing I've ever seen in my life.
I like escape rooms.
You do?
Yeah. But that requires problem solving and thinking.
Yeah,
and outsmarting things.
Yeah, that's just
I don't
like
have to pretend
puzzle.
To be somebody. That's way different.
Do you like them to be so immersive that it's like, oh, this is real, you
we
know?
We went to one in Soulard.
It's like the opening scene of Saw. There's a guy on the floor.
Yeah. I've never seen
it's a real
any
body.
Saw.
That guy's moving.
Is he dead? Is he not dead? Who knows?
No, he's cute.
It's
when you're going to an escape room in downtown St. Louis.
Yeah. <you're really> That's not a part of this.
Get him out of here. That's not good.
You said it, not me.
I know. I shouldn't have. I'm out of practice. Can somebody get me a filter in here?
Let's talk about defund the police.
We did the one in Soulard, and it was so fun. And it was very, like, the one we started on. Are they still there? I assume they're still there. I'm going to look them up because I would be happy to promote them.
I think they were doing the one over, like, where the darkness is. Is that the one you're talking about?
Yeah, probably.
Yeah, I believe so. I believe there's still an active escape room there.
The one we did started out in, like, a subway car, and it starts you out where everybody has to buckle in a seat, so you have to figure out how to get your seats unbuckled before can do anything. And it had 1, 2, 3, 4, I think the progression was between 5 rooms, and you had an hour to get out.
That's impressive.
And it was very immersive. And I've also done ones that are in, like,
yeah, Me too.
Like offices.
Yeah. Yeah.
That's and the kind I did. In a room.
I mean, I'm going to, I need to find out where this place is, because if they're still doing it, it was really, really cool. And it was not easy. You know, it wasn't like, and the things that you'd have to do to get from one thing to the next were immersive. And like I said, when you're starting out strapped into a seat, that's kind of a cool, it's just like that. But I like those. No parts where I'm role playing.
I think I missed out. I missed that boat a little bit because the first one I ever did, I was producing a show called The Thread with Tim Azell and Virginia Kerr. When it first started, I was a part of that show. And the first
what
episode.
Happened?
Well, just like my many
and
marriages.
Now we're here.
I was having a rough time. Started. I was in between my second and third marriage with my wife.
And then this fella, Tim Azell, came along and it changed my life forever. what a honeymoon we had.
Oh,
and I mean that as a period of time, not a literal honeymoon, you guys.
Which is confusing when you're talking about marriages, that's not what you were referring to, but carry
on. No, this is on you. So we for the first episode of the show, we went to an escape room. Well, I had never done one before. So we showed up and, you know, we're trying to make a piece out of this. Well, they're all, the people who are running it are not necessarily in the places they normally are telling you what you should do. So I got to see nothing but the behind the scenes of an escape room. And I was like, oh, this is what happens. And it was really like cool, but it took away the mystique of it. So I never really got into them after that because I kind of saw what happens behind the room.
Do you guys do haunted houses, or like maybe at a period in your life, would you do haunted houses?
In high school, I did just because that's what everybody did.
Did you like them?
No.
Were you scared?
Yes.
Yeah, I'm a no. I'm a hell no.
Have you ever done them?
Yes, it's terrifying. I don't like it. I won't do it.
Pastor?
No, I don't like them.
Because they're scary?
No, I just don't like them.
You just like them?
I don't like walking through the dark and like uneven floors.
And plus
and
paying
stuff
for
like that.
It.
People jumping out at you.
$20. Yeah. We're going to scare the pants off of you.
It's fun to laugh at people when they get scared, though.
Yeah. Yeah. In general.
Yeah. Yeah.
We would go, when I was in high school, senior, that's like what you did.
Course.
When if you could drive during Halloween, maybe into college a little bit, but it seems to me like that's around the 16 to maybe 20 crowd.
Yep.
Before
yep.
you can
that
drink.
Sounds right.
And I realized it wasn't until I was, I think, 17 years old, first real haunted house that I went through, not just like a local, you
at
know,
the haunted hayride at
yes.
the picnic
no.
up the road.
Like real haunted house, like there were there were murders in the house.
Ghosts,
no, that was
zombies,
an escape room.
Oh, oh.
Yeah. Yeah, so I'm going. We went to Soulard, and we're going through this haunted house, and I realized that I cope with fear with humor.
You laugh.
I've never. Mm-hmm. No, I'd like make jokes. Like I've never been funnier in my whole life
oh,
than
yeah?
when I was going through a haunted house, and like I was totally trying to get. I was scared, but I was trying to make people laugh and make myself less scared by using humor. And we were going, we had four girls, I think. I'm pretty sure it was four of us. And when you're going through these haunted houses, sometimes the halls are wider, sometimes they're just one person wide or whatever. We were going through this one corridor. And, you know, generally when you go into a haunted house, you kind of appoint, like, who's going to be the leader?
Mm-hmm.
The brave. Like, I do this all the time. You're going first. It's equally, if not more scary to be the trailer. The
yeah,
person
you
in the back.
Be solidly in the middle.
Yes.
Wedged in.
Yes.
Arms around you.
I didn't want to be the front or the back.
No.
So I was two or three in this line of people. But once you get in there and you're running for your life from people, sometimes it doesn't go according to plan. And sometimes when you're not supposed to be the last person in line, you become the last person in line. And in this particular instance, we turned a corner and we went down this corridor that was just one person wide, and the three girls I was with sprinted forward and left me to the back, and I was running like maybe 8 feet behind them, and the actor thought that we had all passed, and he opened the door to creep up behind us, and I face planted right into the door, and for the rest of the time I was like, your jerk friend back there, he just hit me in the face with a door. And so all these people were all dressed up so creepy. They're like, oh my gosh, I am so sorry. Are you okay? Like instantly breaking character to apologize to me. Like that's how I did the last part of it. But I mean, like seriously smacked me, made me fall back, because they thought that we had all passed, and that, most definitely not all of us had.
That seems like a gift they gave you, though, because once you get smacked in the face, you're not as scared anymore.
I was ready to fight the zombies.
Yeah, now you're angry and in pain, and they're apologizing. It just, like, changes the power dynamic.
Yes, it totally did. So if you go in there, get hurt.
Get whacked in the face.
And then scare them with a lawsuit.
I'm in the first room and I'm yelling, I've got heart problems.
Ow! Ow! Ah! My arm!
Stop my toe!
No, the key is to get about 75% of the way through, then get hurt, then demand a refund. I think that's actually why I didn't like haunted houses.
It all comes. That's the second time that you've mentioned the cost of said experiment.
No, I specifically remember being in high school and going with a group of people, and I was like, I don't really want to do these things, but you know, all the people are doing it, and there's cute girls there, so I went. So
it's always good to put yourself in positions to be terrified.
Yeah,
with cute girls around.
I know.
But have to act like a macho man.
Right. Which can you imagine me in high school?
Do
like,
you have
I
a really, really high?
Pi-
do you have a really high pitched scream?
I don't know about anymore. I'm over 40, as you know.
Is he lower?
Well over 40 now.
It's, as you get older.
Yeah, you were
your
in your 40s.
Goes away.
So we should try to scare Ryan Wiggins and see what a scream sounds like.
Okay.
Between now and Halloween.
Yeah.
I'm open to that because I can't figure out how you're going to do that.
I'm
in
not
here.
Really asking
on
you.
On air?
No.
Oh, okay.
Oh, no.
On video.
You won't see it coming.
Okay, on video.
Yeah.
So I'll be somewhere like walking through my office or in the bathroom and you're going to open the door.
Or at home or in your car.
You pass me the toilet paper.
If I'm on the toilet and you open the door, I promise I will scream. Please don't video that, though.
So will I.
Please, what are you doing?
This is terrifying.
This is inappropriate. Ah, HR!
Bridget, we're going to need you to... What is this? Gwyneth Paltrow and Huey Lewis, take us away. We'll be right back. Don't go away.
This is the Annie Fry Show.
Fry Show. Happy to be with you on this Monday afternoon. We were just talking about escape rooms and haunted houses and stuff. The one that I went to that I highly recommend if you're interested in doing something like this with friends, this is a super fun night out, is St. Louis Escape. And the website is stlouisescape.com. You can go check out there and see if it's up, if that's your thing. Not getting paid to say that. Would love to be paid to say that, but I'm not. So it's just an experience that I had that really I enjoyed. I wanted to get to a comment that was on the live stream from earlier in the show when we had Mark Cox on. And if you want to join that live chat, we are on the Annie Fry YouTube channel live every day when we broadcast the show noon to three. Also, the Facebook page, facebook.com/AnnieFryShow. And we're streaming now on Twitch, Annie Fry Show there, if you're a Twitch user. What do you call people who use Twitch? Is there a name for them?
I don't think so.
Twitchers?
No.
Twitchy.
Twitchies.
People who they're just
Twitch.
Gamers.
Twitch people. Gamers. Fair enough. And a sprinkling of conservative talk radio show fans.
And us.
For flavor.
Gamers.
I'm trying to reach a younger demographic, and I have some exciting things that involve gaming in the works coming soon that Brad's going to help me with. So that's why we're starting that there. I opened the show, and I was talking about Joe Biden and... when he was inaugurated, first of all, he spent the entire campaign really in an emotional / popularity contest attacking Donald Trump for his attitude and his mentality. And Joe Biden constantly was really approaching the idea of being the president of the United States as being the grown-up who was going to come back and take charge and bring people together. You know, and then his inauguration speech was very much so about unity, his word of unity. And when I go back and I look at how aggressively this administration has prioritized leading into their taking of power, how much they have prioritized this idea that they are going to come in and restore a level of class and a level of commonality to the American people, and I compare that to what they've done in the last 8 months, this is a big fat swing and a miss. And Andy on our YouTube channel, who we love, who's our resident non-Trumper, I guess he's non-conservative. I don't know. I won't define you, Andy. We love that you're there, and we appreciate your counter sentiment to a lot of the things we're talking about. He challenged the idea that if Donald Trump was there for 4 years, why didn't Donald Trump do some of this unifying? If Joe Biden is failing at it, Donald Trump failed at that as well. My opinion is Donald Trump had no interest in unifying this country. When Donald Trump came into office, he gave a big, booming voice to an entire group of people who didn't have a place at the table before, especially 8 years of Barack Obama. Barack Obama divided this country more than anybody in my lifetime, and I've been alive for 37 years. That's not very long, comparatively speaking. But you remember when Barack Obama said to John McCain, I think they were talking about health care, and it was close to after the election. John McCain lost epically in 2008 to Barack Obama. And John McCain was making a case about something that had to do with health care, which ironically, he's the one who gave the ultimate down vote when they went to repeal it. And Barack Obama said, "I won the election, John." And he basically told John McCain, "This is going to go my way, not yours, because I won the election." That's the same thing Donald Trump did for 4 years. It was okay when Barack Obama did it because Barack Obama won the election. And as we know, elections have consequences. But the idea that Donald Trump should have come into office and unified the people, there is no way that he could have unified the people, because the only way you can unify with the Barack Obama Democrats is to keep your mouth shut and to know your place. Donald Trump comes onto the scene and says, there's a lot of people out there right now who are not okay with the way it was, and I'm going to speak up for them. There is no way that somebody can come speak on behalf of, I'll just speak for myself here, and I'm going to ask the room in a minute how they feel about this. There's no way that somebody can come and advocate for the things that I think are good for this country and that you might think are good for this country in Barack Obama's America and not be contentious. By definition, it is contentious. And from the moment that people realized that Donald Trump was serious about running for president, and we all had our jaws dropping throughout the course of that entire primary when he just kept being Donald Trump from day freaking one, being Donald Trump and picking off one primary opponent and then the other and then the other. He never changed from that. And he punched back. I've said this many times. He is the bully's bully. The guy who finally says, I've had enough of this. We're sick and tired of being pushed around, and he punched the bully in the nose. That's not a unifying thing to do, but you had to stop the bully. And there are so many people on the playground going, finally somebody has stood up for us and spoken in this capacity so that we have a voice. When Joe Biden comes back on the scene and he's stumping in his inaugural speech and in his campaign about unity, the only way he gets unity is if we all keep our mouths shut.
No Republican president in this environment, with this media environment, can ever be a unifier. It's impossible. Because even the most centrist Republican will get attacked constantly by mainstream news. Because you need the media to paint you in a certain way to be a unifier. Because that's how most people in the country and the world take in politics, is through media. They're not watching C-SPAN. They're taking it in through a lens.
Mm-hmm.
So unless you have fawning media coverage, or at least fair media coverage, you'll never have a unifying Republican president ever again, I don't think. However, you could have a actual unifying Democrat if they governed from the center, which is what Joe Biden ran on that he was going to do.
And he lied.
Because he had the media going to run coverage for him no matter what, and they already are, but they can't figure out even how to do it. He's done so horribly that that even they are like, sorry, buddy, we're trying here for you, but we don't know what to do. But that is, you're right. There's a huge difference. He ran on being a unifier and has not done it, even with all those tools at his disposal. Trump did not.
And Trump would be incapable of representing, first and foremost, himself, but all of the American people who globbed on to this idea of having somebody who was willing to fight for them. He can't do that and give everybody warm fuzzies. The warm fuzzies come from creating a collective enemy that we can all go collectively point and go, bad guys, they're right over there. You're the bad guy. If you don't subscribe to everything that these far left progressives espouse and everything they stand for, if you're not behind that, they change the words that we use. They change the meanings of the words that we use. They make it so that words that we use cannot be used anymore. They control the vocabulary. They control the language. They control the way you speak to one another. They've been so successful at this point that you can't even have unity under your own roof or in your own family or with your friends that you've known for decades. Just like Ryan said, I agree with that completely. I don't believe that a Republican with actual Republican conservative ideals can ever be a unifying president if the media gets away with what they continue to get away with. And they will as long as people watch it. As long as there are ratings and ad dollars, the media will continue to be able to do what they're doing. You can't have an instance where a Republican comes in and goes against what the people on the TV are saying and what the politicians are saying and not have it be divisive. And the reason why we're so divided right now is because the people who are on the right side of the aisle and the people who are on the left side of the aisle play by a different set of rules. If you're on the right side of the aisle, you're not wrong. You're a horrible person. You have no integrity. You have no standards. You are a morally vapid person. If you're on the left, you're just right. Correct. You're the person who is in the right. So for Joe Biden to say we're going to be the adults in the room and we're going to bring back unity, it's real easy to do when the media won't even cover the absolute disaster that is taking place right now. And they're kind of starting to do it.
Well, and to this kind of goes back to what you taught me, which I probably should have learned in school, is that the media is supposed to be slightly to the other side of whatever party's in power. And then the Obama presidency completely blew that out of the water. The media glommed onto him, and Trump came in and said, enough, there's no balance of power here, tried to take it back, and now Republicans have been made to just be the bad guys. And Joe Biden ran on the fact that he was going to try to reset that a little bit, and he hasn't done that. So how do we reset that?
Which is why, Brad, when you listen to who did Donald Trump attack the most? It wasn't Democrats. It's the media.
Yeah.
The way that Donald Trump would always bring the media front and center, you know, you can see him doing his Donald Trump point. Nobody points like Donald Trump. Like, it's a weird thing. I can't even. he just has mannerisms about him that are very specific to him. But I think that he had success. I don't know how you feel about it, Brad, but success in bringing the media in. He called him the enemy of the people. And I agree with that to a pretty large extent, because the media is supposed to advocate for you and for me. And they are advocating for people who are in power.
Yeah, I definitely see that there's people out there that you can see the divide. The people that remember Uncle Walter Cronkite.
Mm-hmm.
And they're like, we can trust the media. We can lean on them. They're advocating for us. And then it's like a generational divide. Then there's people out there that's like, yeah, I don't think that they're advocating for me. I mean, they look very one-sided.
Mm-hmm.
So
they want you. They have something that they need you to know and believe. And if you pay enough attention, that will be the case day in and day out. That happens on both sides of the aisle, because the existence of this on the left created an opportunity and a void on the right for talk radio to come in and be as successful as it is. The conservative media movement is a response to the progressive media establishment, and we're living it every day. We're going to take a quick break. Ryan Wiggins, Brad Range, Trisha, and myself, in studio with us for the next 2 o'clock hour. Come have a conversation with us on our live stream. We'll be right back.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Odyssey is giving you a chance to win a trip to London to see Taylor Swift at the Eras Tour. It's Tay in the UK.
Hey, it's Taylor.
Just download the free Odyssey app, log in and listen to a participating station for a minimum of 60 minutes to get your daily entry. And you could win a chance to fly off to London with three friends and see Taylor.
I can't wait to see you at the Eras Tour in London.
For more, go to odyssey.com/Taylor.
Tay in the UK.
It's on the Odyssey app.
Thanks to Republic Records.
This is a national contest.